Hi, I'm Mark Maron with Stu Ellicott and Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. It's 6 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition. Today, the struggle continues, as usual, in the world that we live in. A full-blown expose of things Iraq had no links to. The presidential palm pilot, the liberal agenda, and September 11th panel. Right now, I'm joined by Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott. Good morning, you two.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Tough crowd last night. It was a chaotic mess.
Uh-oh.
A hornet's nest of ego busting. Like, just, it's like a competition, man. Patrice O'Neill was on. It was insane. Everything was chaotic. At one point, you know, Colin Quinn made me the host for a couple minutes.
That's the rotund guy.
Patrice is the big, heavy-set, boundaryless, loudmouth black dude.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, let's not get too lighthearted, all right, you know, because we are continuing our theme of, you know, trying to assess, you know, the religious rights, you know, affiliation with this president. And today, you know, what amazes me is that Cheney is coming out and saying and swearing that Al-Qaeda is linked to Saddam. I mean, this stuff, and we're going to talk about it at length, has been proven to be BS. It's a lie. All right. And what I don't understand is how most of the people in this country can still support this president, this administration, knowing that it's a lie. And it sort of goes into, you know, it connects to my thoughts about if the religious right is so pro-Bush, if they believe that the end times are upon us and that soon the apocalypse will bring the second coming of Christ, if that's what they believe and they believe that this president was chosen by God to be their leader, that means they will believe anything this guy has to say, even if it's a lie. The president and the vice president are lying, and we are going to prove that later. Now, the thing that really frightens me is that if people believe that this guy is the good for, like, anti-terror president, that he's having success, this means that these people admire, the things that they admire about George Bush is his stubbornness and his ability to plow ahead. Basically, what they're saying is we admire this president's ability to stay the course in the face of the truth.
To lie in the face of all evidence. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Now, the thing is that, like, what does that mean for the bulk of America? If 56% of the people in this country are approving his war on terror, yet from all evidence, he's lying and there is, you know, and terrorism is worse, that means that most people in America on some level are stupid or religious fanatics.
Just throw in the gay marriage thing. All right. If you have any doubts about Bush, if any of his base have doubts, then he throws in gay marriage because they'll all back him on that.
But that's even ridiculous. So this is a president that stands to lie. We had an interesting email from a guy who said, on God and politics, my Italian immigrant father who came to worship the principles of the U.S. Constitution and the rule of law always told his children, never believe a politician when they use God or the flag to sell a political point. He would often say that anything said in this context is almost certainly a lie. The reason being, if they were telling the truth, there would be no need to invoke either. And this is an interesting thing about Cheney and the fact that, you know, this is a very secretive administration. They will not come clean with anything until they are caught on it. And even then, they will manage to displace the blame and evade the, you know, being guilty of anything. And here he's positing this idea that there's a connection between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, and he says he's got the facts. Well, wouldn't this be one of those situations where you might want to tell us what the secret is because everyone knows you're lying?
You know what this is, what this reminds me of, and you got to stay with me for a minute on this. Back in the bad old days here in New York City before they kind of built buildings over the entire Times Square area, there used to be these guys that would come out and play what was called three-card Monty. They would come out with these little cardboard little box cutout things.
I'm not in for that one again. I've already lost a couple $100 when I was a kid.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Who's got the red? Who's got the black? And
yeah.
We got, you know, there's supposedly two red cards and one, I'm sorry, two black cards, one red card. You pick the red card, you double your money. Well, there was always a trick to that game, okay? Unless you were, and if you didn't know the trick, you'd stand there, you'd lose your shirt,
right?
All right? That's what George Bush and Dick Cheney remind me of. The guy playing three-card Monty in Times Square that I remember from 25
years. Watch your red. There it is.
Yep.
And there's always the one guy going, all right, throw $40. $40, that's it.
That's it. Whoops, oh, that's the black. Yeah. Sorry. And see, the thing that Bush does, and I have to say that I think due to Karl Rove, he's managed to learn how to do this with some skill despite some really obvious handicaps. He has managed, whenever anyone's attention is focused on one thing, he flips the card over and get your attention going on something else.
That's
all right. Whether it's going to the Vatican and trying to get help from the Pope, or going, you know, doing a satellite broadcast for the Southern Baptist, mm-hmm. or now backing up Dick Cheney in some really indefensible stuff. Okay, this is when we get into this, which will be momentarily. I mean, what they're saying, what they're expecting people to believe here, is absolutely mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling.
In the face of there's no evidence, and I can't. Are people stupid, Riley? I mean, are they just programmed to believe their leader no matter what? Are they that infantile in their fear?
It's like hypnosis.
Who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? That's all they're doing. And I mean, in the end, that is what it comes down to. Who do you believe? Is it President Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney who continue to maintain this link between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein? Or do you believe the 9/11 Commission, which Wednesday said there is no evidence that link exists? The answer to that question, who you believe, is going to determine whether or not this guy is reelected. First, earlier this week, it was Vice President Cheney speaking before that James Madison Institute conservative think tank, and he brought the issue back, by the way, to center stage. Then the president himself backs Cheney up and repeated the administration's assertion that Saddam and al-Qaeda were linked, perhaps through Jordanian terrorist Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. The administration also spent part of Wednesday saying, no, the vice president will not back away from his assertions of earlier this week. In fact, they say Cheney's statements don't even conflict with the 9/11 Commission panel's findings. In an interesting turn of phrase, the administration says Cheney was talking about links between Saddam and al-Qaeda, not Saddam and the September 11th attacks.
So the subterfuge, if that's the right word, is that it's not just a three-card Monty thing, but they're just, you know, baffling people with confusion.
Who's got the red? Like 9/11, who's got the black?
Exactly. 9/11, al-Qaeda, the truth, the not the truth. It's a lot easier for most Americans who are relatively detached from the news, generally, to just get sound bites. It's like our guest a while back, George Lakoff, the guy who talked about framing, is that once you put the context out there into the world, it'll lock into the people's brain if it's strong enough. So enough people out there have decided in their brain that when they originally said Saddam, al-Qaeda, there's a war on terror, it makes sense, it's connected. That frame is going to stay in there. It's not going to shatter, no matter what kind of truth you throw in there. And that's a sad thing.
I don't think even after this 9/11 commission that I will believe any more that they even think that they are telling the truth. I don't think it's even a kind of stubborn insistence and refusing to look at the facts that are out there. I think that they know that they are lying. At this point, it's kind of incontrovertible that they are lying. But they have to carry on convincing themselves. It's not just that they are trying to convince the base voters that will vote Republican come November. It's that they have to keep – they're trying to whip themselves into some kind of frenzy and convince themselves that they were telling the truth, because they know that they were lying. It's even worse than trying to convince the American public of something that they believe and we know is wrong. I think that they know that they are lying too. Well, they just can't stop. They just can't get off this now. There's no way they'll back down. There's no way that we went to war under false pretenses.
But you're saying that they can't, but they don't want to.
I mean, absolutely, both. They don't want to, and they can't. But it just gets worse and worse.
But okay, I mean, they of course they know the land.
See, here's the thing. This isn't the first time the administration has said this. Let's go back to September of last year and listen to George W. Bush on the links between Saddam and al-Qaeda.
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with September the 11th. Now, what the vice president said was that he has been involved with al-Qaeda.
Now, you see that? That could have been said yesterday.
Yeah, and also here, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, September 15th, 2003. Quote, we have never claimed that Saddam Hussein had either direction or control of 9/11. And Donald Rumsfeld said this September 16, 2003, I've not seen any indication that would lead me to believe that I could say that in reference to that. And, you know, even Hussein himself said, if that was true, why wouldn't I be proud of that? If we had a relationship, this quoting Saddam Hussein, with al-Qaeda, we wouldn't be ashamed to admit it.
Mm-hmm.
So where are they getting their information?
Well, a White House official says, and this is a quote, the record of links between Saddam and al-Qaeda is clear to anyone who has open eyes and an open mind, end quote.
Yeah, an open eyes and an open mind and no sort of relationship with the truth or evidence or any sort of rational way of looking at the world.
And an open wine bottle.
Yeah, right.
And they don't care at all that this is, you know, the fact that they have lost all credibility. That was a devastating blow to their credibility. It's on the front pages around the world, and they couldn't care less.
Still ahead, the President's Palm Pilot, plus a liberal agenda and more right here on Air America Radio. Nineteen past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning Sedition. I'm here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott on Air America Radio. I am relatively calm. Relatively calm. I get emails sometimes say, calm down. We haven't even got through our first cup of coffee yet, and you're yelling. You're bloviating. I will bloviate more in the hour. I'm going to bring this up right now. The Vatican, I don't know. There's a couple issues with the Vatican right now. I don't know whether they're buckling or they're trying to accommodate George Bush's request to put the screws into his culture war, you know, talking points or not. But the other thing, that'll be in a minute. But right now, Catholics from more than 25 countries are in Rome this week to hammer out a strategy for combating the threat posed to Christianity by New Age religions and fads. Can you believe this? These are enemies of the Catholic Church. And the list includes the Jewish Kabbalah, that one that's practiced by Madonna, the Enneagram, right? Egyptian occult practices, Sufism, the lore of the Druids, Celtic Christianity, medieval alchemy. Man, my buddy's going to be pissed, boy. He just set that lab up. He was this close to getting the formula to gold. And also Renaissance Hermeticism. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I know who are practicing hermetics.
Yeah.
Yoga. Here's the other thing. Wait till my yoga instructor. How is she going to respond when I get to class and go, did you know you're an enemy of the Catholic Church? The Pope has it out for you. Yoga. Buddhism. You know, I imagine that the initial list probably included a lot more. Like the original draft probably had, Jews, Islam, psychology, calculus, mathematics. But I think that's amazing that they are still, threatened by these things.
They're threatened by kind of moderates within their own church, though. These people feel threatened by absolutely everything. If they're scared to open doors.
That's the other thing about the anti-abortion issue is now there's the 10 New York Counseling Centers for Pregnant Women, has this guy, Chris Slattery, is urging Cardinal Egan to say he would deny community carry because of his support for abortion legislation. That is contrary to church policy. This idea that they can't give communion to politicians who are pro-abortion or defend choice is ridiculous. I mean, the thing is, aren't these supposed to be personal issues? Isn't there supposed to be a struggle? If you're having an issue with abortion or you're on the fence about it, you shouldn't be denied communion as a Catholic. You're still a Catholic. And if you need to take up that struggle, you take it up with your priest. You take it up with your own conscience. See, the problem with religious fanaticism and some of the commitment, I'm not knocking Christianity at all, but one of the great tests of faith is personal struggle, is personal doubt in the face of what you consider evil or temptation or whatever. That is the core of what faith is. And the idea that the Catholic Church becomes political or any of these things become political, it's a personal struggle of the Catholic, isn't it? They should never deny a Catholic. If someone is a Catholic, they should be able to take communion. If that person has issues or they have issue with that person, shouldn't that be taken up between the guy and his priest?
Well, let's look at these two stories together. Number one, the first thing that jumps out in the story that you were talking about in terms of this meeting, to combat the threat. It says in the copy, the threat posed to Christianity. Does that mean then that the Catholics are concerned with denominations other than their own? Are they concerned with the threat to Methodists or the threat to Baptists or the threat to Unitarians? Or are they really concerned only with the threat to Catholicism? Because they say it's a threat to Christianity. I'm not sure I buy that. The idea that
also kind of goes in hand in hand. I mean, to interrupt you with that because Bush practices a type of Christianity that is not Catholic, and that sort of like, I'm not a conspiracist, but this is a president that just asked the Pope to support him basically last week, begged him
to support him. And see, the other thing is, this is a country that is supposedly built on the idea of religious tolerance, which means that as far as Americans are concerned, there should be no issue about one religion threatening another. There should be room enough for both of them to exist inside this supposedly free church and state separate country.
Right. You should be able to practice whatever
you want.
And keep that out of politics.
Yeah.
The thing that amazes me about this report is that they complain in it that in Western culture the appeal of so-called alternative approaches to spirituality is very strong. This is what it says. New forms of psychological affirmation of the individual have become very popular among Catholics. Well, why doesn't that make them look at what they are saying to other Catholics and realizing they are falling short and not start blaming it on the influences that are outside, which are clearly just picking up the slack where their own kind of rigid approach to faith, values, modern life are not meeting people's needs and are not flexible and are just failing to modernize.
Doesn't that go in the face of dogma, in the power of dogma to begin with, that their commitment to orthodoxy is ultimately all they really have to stand on when it comes right down to it, and that they're probably struggling for the very life of the Catholic Church in
probably,
general?
But they are struggling for the very core, and if that's what they want, is that, you know, ultimate orthodoxy, they have to realize that they will lose a lot of people along the way. You are not going to be able to expand your ranks by holding on to the kernel of your particular faith. You have to move with the times. They don't, they won't, they can't, and that's why they're in trouble.
The Southern Baptist Convention, which we talked about yesterday, has decided that the homeschooling proposal, Southern Baptist Convention voted down a controversial proposal Wednesday that would have asked parents to pull their children from public schools in favor of homeschooling and religious education because they have decided that the government schools are you know, officially godless. Now, this is one of the things I want to talk to our listeners about, because yesterday I get accused of Christian bashing a lot. But if you're Christian and you really believe in the principles of Christianity, you should be really hyper aware of religious extremism in this country and realize that their agenda is very demonic and it is a real agenda. I mean, the person that proposed this homeschooling agenda to the Southern Baptist Convention was a retired Air Force general, T.C. Pinckney of Alexandria, of Virginia, okay, and an attorney, Bruce Short of Spring, Texas. Now, I don't, you call me crazy, call me a conspiracy freak.
Crazy? Conspiracy freak?
Thank you. But when a retired Air Force general comes up to, you know, presents an idea to 8,000 Baptists who represent 16 million people in this country to take their children's young minds out of public schools and school them at home, the next step is, now we want to introduce the uniform that everyone must wear when we take this country back. I mean, how far away is that really? And if you're not upset about this and you're going to call me a Christian basher because of this, you are asleep, man. These people want to take this country down from the inside. And if you don't see that and you don't think this is an important issue, you are asleep and you're stupid.
Now, ask yourself this question, Mark Maron. Why do you think they voted down the homeschooling? Take a wild guess.
Because they want the responsibility?
Multiply 16 million people times the average property tax that each one of them pays into the public school system, whether their kid is there or not.
So they don't want to lose the money, but also
not only do they not want to lose the money, you got to understand how these people think.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
They say, okay, fine.
Yeah.
It's better for us to go into the public school system and use our muscle in property tax payments to affect the changes that we want from inside that system.
Right.
We pay money into it. We're going to have to pay money into it no matter what. So we will make it what we want since we fund it.
So you're saying more religious extremists within the school board?
They will take over school board. And this is, by the way, an agenda that they've had for some time. They take over school board after school board after school board. They open these different things up. Next thing you know, people are proselytizing in the schools under the guise of a stay-in-school program, an after-school program, a sports program. This is even more insidious than most people think. And they will use the money that they fund the system through property taxes to get this stuff done. That's why they decided not to do homeschooling, because they can use money to accomplish their goals on a different state.
Can't we send them all to one state and kind of seal the borders?
They wanted to go to South Carolina. I'm all for it.
Absolutely.
But, you know, the threat of this, so if you're a liberal and you have problems with the way I think about this, and these people are included in your liberal umbrella, then, I mean, we really have a problem. We have a point of contention within the liberal community.
You have a huge problem if you have kids.
In the future, 866-303-AARO, 866-303-2270. What's your reaction to this, to the religious right slowly taking over the country from the inside?
This is like the blob. It can form into anything at any time. You ever see the movie?
I have out of the house, down the stairs, in the yard.
That's what it is. When we come back to Presidential Palm Pilot, the liberal agenda direct from the Streisand compound. And you on the phones, 866-303-AARO. That's 866-303-2270. You're listening to Air America Radio.
33 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Sue Ellicott, Mark Riley. Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. We're taking your calls. 866-303-AAR0. 866-303-2270. We're talking about religious extremism in America and the depth and scope of the problem. And that's what we're talking about. Right now it's time for the Presidential Palm Pilot. I just got it from my dude. I guess everything's okay. He downloaded it from Bush's schedule this morning. What do you got? There's the music. 8 o'clock a.m. Wake up, stay on message. Al-Qaeda definitely had ties to Ronald Reagan. Wait, that has to be wrong. I'm happy to stay on message, but Carl has got to check these things. 10:05 a.m., meet with Cabinet. Ask them what the message is, the real one. 1:15 p.m., speak to National Federation of Independent Businesses. Ask Rove if I can walk out on stage to BTO's Taking Care of Business. 2:20 p.m., return to White House. Try to cheer up after encounter with people who actually succeeded in business. 3:30 p.m., fly to Spokane, Washington. Have crew show the movie 13 going on 30 again. 5:15 p.m., arrive at Fairchild Air Force Base, Spokane. Note, I am flying from Washington to Washington. Prepare humorous remark noting the amazing similarity. 6:20 p.m., make appearance at fundraiser for state senate race. Note, when reading speech, do not look down at note cards and say the words, insert candidate's name here. 7:45 p.m., fly from Spokane to Seattle. Note, you're still in Washington. The joke still works.
Uh-oh.
8:30 p.m., fly from Seattle to Fort Lewis. Prepare speech for soldiers tomorrow. Words to avoid, Abu Ghraib, extended tour, quagmire, car bomb. 9:30 p.m., West Coast time. Spend the next 3 hours figuring out if I'm going to bed 3 hours earlier or 3 hours later. There you go.
That's you notice where he's going, right?
Yes.
Air Force bases, Army bases.
Yep,
back
yep.
to the base.
Morale time. Yep. Will in Michigan, how are you? Hi, Will.
I think...
how's it going?
I think the problem in politics isn't religion. It's apostasy. These religious right-wingers are deliberately misinterpreting the teachings of Christianity to promote their political agenda. They're just as bad as Osama.
Exactly. Not unlike the Crusades or the Spanish Inquisition. Thanks for your call.
See, he hit on something very important.
Yeah.
Because I was always taught, and I wasn't taught by genius Christians or anything.
Yeah.
I was always taught that Christianity is something that you defined to some extent for yourself. You define your own faith. You act on your own faith. You are given a set of moral principles when you attend church, whatever denomination it is, and you live by that faith.
Human principles.
Yes.
Yes.
But it doesn't seem as though that's good enough for some people.
But that's too liberal, isn't it? It's just too liberal, and there's too much responsibility placed on the individual, and you're not following rules. You're not complying.
Pat in Connecticut. Pat, how are you?
Hey.
Good. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good, man. It's a good day.
Good. I just wanted to make a comment on... they're saying it's not political as far as not giving communion to carry or
right,
politics.
Right, of course it is, right?
Yeah. Well, they're willing to go to prisons and give convicted murderers last rites right in the prisons. I mean,
right.
Are they calling a politician who has a view different from theirs worse, and he's not entitled to those rites more than a convicted murderer?
Right.
I just think it's crazy.
You're absolutely right. It should be a personal issue. And even though, you know, a stance is a stance, but still, I think within the religion, it should be a personal issue. Yeah, I mean, they're giving a convicted murderer his, you know, chance to get straight with his God. And I think that anyone's personal struggle, even within the church, our board op is a Catholic, that is between you and your priest to establish and solidify your relationship with you and your God. I mean, for them to get involved with this and to start, you know, talking about alienating people from the Catholic Church because of their political views is completely contrary to what the struggle is about.
Besides, if they stop giving communion to all pro-choice Catholics, there'd be very few people lined up at the
no
rails
kidding.
On Sunday.
Larry in Manhattan, how are you, Larry?
Good hey. Morning, gentlemen and ladies. Basically, faith and truth, by definition, are opposites. Faith means basically blind acceptance with no evidence required. Truth, on the other hand, requires evidence and proof. You know, for example, during the Dark Ages, from 500 to about 1500, Western civilization was dominated by blind religious faith and dictatorship, where questioning led to horrific tortures. A lot of the things that we've seen in the movies, the rack, etc., the Iron Maiden.
How about seeing last week in Iraq?
Thank
you know, the rack. How about Iraq?
Well, you know, also Galileo was a classic example of this, where faith and truth, you know, were at opposites, where the faith at the time was that the earth was the center of the universe, and in an arrogance that we are this, you know, this exalted creature, despite Galileo's telescope, which proved otherwise.
And he died in prison, right?
I believe so. No, he had to recant in public,
or be
threatened with. Another more recent example of this is the Human Genome Project, which now shows conclusively 98% of human genes are identical with chimpanzee genes. And as you go down the evolutionary ladder, the differences get greater and greater. And I mean, even with worms, we share something like 50 or 60% of our genes.
Wow, we're just animals?
Well, hey, really. So, you know,
thinking animals.
So, you know, historically, it was in fact this this period of the Dark Ages that caused the Enlightenment, which was basically a revolution against that dictatorship, and the height of the Enlightenment was our American Revolution with the belief in human rights, and from that is where we get this strict separation of church and state. This is not accident, it's from historical precedent.
Hey, Larry?
Yeah.
I just got to interrupt you and do this. Larry has enlightened us. Thank you, Larry.
Bye bye, guys.
You know, I'm not sure I totally agree with Larry. Look, I consider myself to have a level of faith, but again, my homeschooling, for want of a better term, always taught me to question everything, including my faith. There was a long time in my life I questioned my faith. I really didn't have a whole heck of a lot.
But if you're consumed with fear and anger and hatred, you know, on a daily basis, like the real fear is what I was talking about before, and what Larry says is completely enlightening to me in the sense that because these people who are fanatically religious and they choose not to deal in truth specifically, mm-hmm. in terms of evolution, in terms of other, you know, rational ideas that are pretty much true,
yeah.
All right, is that if they believe that this is their chosen president, then whatever he says is truth, no matter what. And he is really, really hardlining these people and making sure that they come out in droves through, you know, exploiting the faith-based initiatives. And we'll come back with that. 866-303-2270. I guess we're going into it more. Stay on the lines. We appreciate your call here on America. Air America. Air America? Past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning's Edition with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott. We're on Air America Radio. We're taking your calls at 866-303-2270. The shamelessness of this administration to use religion to further their political agenda is bordering on criminal. But this is not where it stops with these people. Recently, just yesterday, Ronald Reagan's family is criticizing the use of the late president's image in a conservative political ad endorsing President George W. Bush. The conservative interest group Club for Growth started an ad about, you know, comparing Bush's war on terror with Reagan's battle against communism. And the Reagan family's against this. Now, you have to understand, this is an administration and a Republican contingency, I guess you would call them, that are willing to use Jesus, the victims of 9/11, dead soldiers, and now dead Reagan to further their agenda. It's heinous.
Let's call it a cabal.
And now we're talking about religious extremism here on the phone. Lenny in Manhattan, what's up, buddy?
Well, I wanted to mention two things. One about John Kerry, but first I wanted to about Bush and religion. I knew we were in trouble when he was asked who his favorite philosopher was during the campaign when he was running for office. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
And he answered Jesus. And nobody, even to this date, has asked him what in Jesus' philosophy does he agree with. I can't find, you know, if I read stuff about turn the other cheek, love your enemies, like what does he agree with Jesus about?
He doesn't agree with him about a lot of things, and he's not that type of Christian necessarily. He's not he doesn't know how to quote scripture. You know, fundamentally, I think his Christianity was based on his need to change his life, to sober up, to get straight with himself. He doesn't seem to be a person that really sort of, you know, entertains and struggles with the scriptures and understanding.
No, but I just was talking about it as to me, it's a very interesting philosophy what Jesus came up with.
Absolutely.
And I just think that Bush, to say that, somebody should ask him, well, what about this? You know, I'm just saying that they give him a pass on everything. And,
You're just asking him to please be specific.
Right.
And he said it. I don't care what his religion is, but if he's going to say that, especially running for office, somebody should ask him.
Yeah, and ask him is part of his interpretation of Jesus lying, continuing to endorse the death penalty, continuing to create wars everywhere.
We can't take him seriously.
There's a lot. But can
it's
I just
question.
Also say something about John Kerry?
Sure.
Because I have the impression that Kerry's strategy is to just assume because Bush is possibly you could say he's laughable.
Yes.
But he's not laughable. He's dangerous.
Absolutely.
And Gore had much more credentials than he was a bumbling Texas governor,
right.
And he won. I mean, he got the election.
Yeah, it's a frightening place we're living in.
Where is Kerry? Why isn't Kerry saying anything? Is he assuming that people will vote for him because Bush is such a joke?
That's a good question. And I think that – thanks for your call. I think that what Kerry was doing was waiting it out to see if Bush would dig his own hole, and he did in a lot of ways, but I think you're right. He does need to stand up around this stuff. Paula in New Jersey, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
I'm pretty good.
I want to thank you guys, actually. Air America is the only place where I've heard dissenting views from clergy.
Right.
Clergy who think this is bogus.
We've talked to people.
This is so dangerous. I was raised Catholic. I went to 8 years to Catholic school. My mom paid for it because she wanted me to have that.
Right.
She
good education.
She tried to get it put in public schools.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just insane, and this is one of the most serious issues in this election.
I think you're right. It's got the seeds of fascism all over it to me.
No,
thanks a lot for your call.
Let's combine something that we just heard.
Okay. All right.
Should John Kerry speak out specifically about religion? Should he take on the church that may look to deny him communion? Should he take George Bush on over some of these religious issues?
Why can't he say, look, that Christianity is being misrepresented, there is religious extremism in this country that is a dangerous factor, a dangerous, group within America that threatens the essence of democracy. And this president is speaking to them and trying to, unify them in a way that is against democracy. Do I think he should have that conversation? I think it would take tremendous nads and have a tremendous impact. Even here, I'm not Christian bashing. Even just then, when I said fascism, it's the way that the Christian right and the extremists in this country are being used and exploited by this administration to gather power. And to tear apart the separation between church and state and really make this a theocracy. A retired Air Force general, addressed the Southern Baptist Convention to try and initiate homeschooling. What is the next step to that? Really ask yourself, rational people.
Sue, what do you think?
I've had many thoughts over the last 10 minutes.
Well, go ahead. What do you think about what
one
do you
of them?
Think about
first the... of all, was on the caller that we cannot take George Bush seriously when he says that Jesus is his favorite philosopher. When I think it's just all about name recognition and throwing that name out there to his base. This is the same guy who says that The Hungry Caterpillar is his favorite book.
But should Kerry take Bush and those who are knocking him or criticizing him based on religion, should he take them on?
No, I don't think he should take them on in a kind of an angry and kind of obvious way. He should do what I think that Bill Clinton did in a very smart way at an event he spoke at yesterday that I attended. And he said, that he felt that he had kept God as and his faith kind of privately. And one of the great strengths of America was the separation of church and state. And people had to realize that this was the attempt to try and kind of and put religion out there was he quoted one of his Oklahoma friends saying, this is all about gays, God and guns. This is just the right way. Trying to come up with divisive issues, and I think that Kerry's got to be careful just not to be angry. He has to say it's a matter between me and my God, and it's not a public issue.
Interesting. We'll be back with your calls. Stay on the line. I guess we're going to keep going with this. There's a lot of activity on the phones.
Yep.
If you want to call 866-303-2270, we'll be back on Air America Radio. Good morning. 53 past the hour. Mark Maron with Sue Alcott, Mark Riley, Morning's Edition, Air America Radio. We're going to take a couple more calls. I feel like we should be playing another AC/DC song.
I feel like 12 years old and hanging out in my brother's bedroom when I hear that.
Yeah, I feel like they should be playing Highway to Hell. That's I think there's some people out there, they're like, that's the wrong AC/DC song for this show.
Wait a minute, he played The Clash straight to hell yesterday, didn't he?
Did he?
Yes, I believe he did.
We got some good music here.
I think he did.
Hey, we got Skeeter. What's up, Skeeter in Vermont? How you doing, buddy?
Good morning, guys.
Hey, Skeeter.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, the 2000 election is not a contest between Democrats and Republicans. This is a contest between Democrats against theocrats.
2004, I mean.
Because these people, these Christian fascists that you call them,
yes,
these people have one thing and one goal.
Yes.
They believe in government by God. And they've been crawling out of the woodwork ever since 9/11, egged on by the Islamo-fascists of Al-Qaeda.
Yes, sir.
And it should become increasingly clear to anyone who has an open mind that we are in danger. Not just we in the United States, but the world is in danger.
I absolutely agree with
because
you.
Because we're headed. I'm reminded of the Nostradamus prophecy of the three world wars, and his prophecy was that the third world war would be over religion,
yes,
a war between Christianity against Islam, and I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it coming before my eyes. I'm
scared too, and it's interesting that Nostradamus is the point of reference.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Thanks for your call, Skeeter. Skeeter calls us a lot, and he seems pretty worked up this morning. But I have the same fears that he does. You know, I haven't checked Nostradamus. The last time I read Nostradamus was to see if my name was mentioned.
Well, you know,
and I
<that's cool>. But you know, when you start looking at how these potential theocrats plan on taking over the government, there's some assumptions that they make that are in and of themselves scary. For example, if you talk to most of these religious right people, one of the first things they tell you is that they're all in favor of Bush's tax cuts. Well, where does it say in any religious doctrine that tax cuts are somehow endorsed by religion? Or endorsed by the kind of Christianity that they're promoting.
And why don't they call this administration on its sympathizing with corporate criminals? I don't know why the morality, they don't let it go back up. If these people are so moral and so Christian, all they get hung up on is gay marriage and abortion and you know, the death penalty sometimes. Why doesn't it go back up the ladder? Why don't they hold Bush responsible for bilking them out of their 401ks, for making their life miserable by denying them, you know, government programs that could help? Why don't they hold them responsible for letting corporate criminals, you know, walk the streets and continue to do business? Why doesn't the morality cover? Why don't they hold them responsible for that? Why are they so blind to that? Because they're just pawns.
So it's a strangely Americanized version of an extreme version of Christianity that most, you know, decent, tolerant Christians would not adhere to, and that is, it's all about me. It's individualism mixed with whichever facets of Christianity you want to handpick for yourself.
Wait, you're talking about, but I think the numbers are not individualist. I think that these people work in collusion with their ministers and with their preachers and their large groups.
But in terms of tax cuts, it's all about me, 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 me.
But that's the middle class.
It's not really about a bigger community. It's not really about caring about other people in a compassionately Christian way.
Well, there's the illiberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Here's your marching orders for today. Get your pads and your pencils. Here we go. One. Praise NBA champion Detroit Pistons management for hiring so many qualified African Americans. Two, strenuously deny that Al-Qaeda ever had links to Osama bin Laden, of course. Three, rotate car antenna, rainbow flag out, Palestinian flag in. Four, watch O'Reilly Factor to perfect eye-rolling technique and puff of pain superiority. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. The 9/11 Commission has an agenda. It's like they're trying to smear the terrorists. There you go. What do you got, Riley? Are you going to take us out of this?
I'm going to take you
for this
out.
Hour?
I hope that they were talking about starting with Joe Dumars, who actually is the Pistons' general manager, who is himself African-American.
There you go.
In the next hour of Morning's Edition, the 9/11 panel meets in its final public session. Mark Maron's Dream Diary and the Presidential Daily Briefing are all coming up here on Air America Radio.
I'm Mark. Mark Maron here along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. It's 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition. Today, the struggle for the soul of America continues. George W. Badley needs a trip to Recovery Corner, even if he doesn't know it. We'll also talk to the author of Bush on the Couch about the president's state of mind, such as it is. He's psychoanalyzed the president. Plus, I'm prepping my dream diary for my weekly trip to my therapist, which is today, and we'll reveal the contents of today's top-secret presidential daily briefing. A lot of stuff this hour. Right now, I'm joined by Mark Riley, Sue Ellicott, who...
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yep. Good morning.
Listen, Sue, I'm going to shut up because I'm going to eat. I want people to know I am turning into Mark Maron, all right?
Oh, no.
I ordered the same bagel from the same joint that he gets his from, and I will now proceed to eat it while the two of you talk.
Okay, listen, but that's very symbolic because I tried to order the same bagel, and it came completely different. Mine came raw, not with the spread. I can't be like Mark, even if I try.
I thought you wanted to get a bagel and lox. You just need to get it toasted.
I did, but I just wanted it toasted with all those nice poppy seed things so they get stuck between my teeth, if that's really nice.
All right, so I guess me and Riley will eat, and you'll talk about hanging out with Clinton.
Yeah,
well, hanging out with hundreds of other people, but, you know, I got the vibe. I was in the auditorium.
Uh-huh.
I went to see the premiere of Hunting the President, which is a film made about the 10-year campaign to destroy Bill Clinton by the right wing, directed by Harry Thomason and Nicholas Perry, and based on a book by friend of the room Joe Connison and Gene Lyons.
All right.
And Clinton was the special guest. I mean, man, there were about 5 or 6 standing ovations. He talked for an hour. He took the microphone, the slimmed-down, book-plugging Bill Clinton, paced around the stage, and the atmosphere in the auditorium was really electric. The most amazing thing of all was that he said that there are 2 big things that are changing the course of America and that he is really optimistic about. One of them is MoveOn.org, and the other is Air America Radio.
Hey!
Hit the hallelujah!
Right.
Did he mention me and Riley?
He didn't. He actually mentioned, funnily enough, he mentioned Al Franken. Al was there.
Not him again.
Liz and Rachel were there from Unfiltered.
You know, I don't think Al gets enough press.
Oh, well, good for him. Good for him. He was there taking notes. He was there in his jeans. He was like man of the people in the audience. And, you know,
Wait. He was taking notes at a Bill Clinton speech?
A lot of people were taking notes. There were a lot of journalists there. It wasn't a speech. They showed the film, and then Clinton basically held forth in that really captivating way that he has. I mean, he can talk your ear off, but he holds the crowd.
Well, did he lay out, man? What did he say we need to do? What did he say what's happening about what we're talking about? How does it all fit in?
He says that he thinks that we have a 50-50 chance of electing a Democrat to the office president.
That's good. That means we're still in the game.
Right. He's not so worried about the split in Congress. What he is worried about is the kind of right-wing takeover of the courts.
There you go. We've been talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
He is concerned about the trivialization of political issues and the Bush administration and George Bush's efforts in particular to dramatize the culture wars, to go after what his Oklahoma friend calls gays, God, and guns.
There you go, the whole morning, 3 days.
It's irrelevant, it's not pertinent to the direction that America is going in. And he said that the persecution of him by the right-wing media, and this film is kind of worth watching, and the Joe Connison, Gene Lyons book is well worth reading on this, it's because they know that we are right. He said that, you know, on our tax policy, on our foreign policy, on our social programs, on our levels of tolerance, that they know we're right. And so what they do is they go after personalities, and they will destroy you. They will stop at nothing. He said he was naive. Even though he's an incredibly smart and worldly guy, he was so naive during his presidency he didn't realize, you know, how venal and corrupt and unrelenting they would be in persecuting him.
I got a very important question.
Okay.
Was Kerry there taking notes?
I didn't see Kerry there. Maybe he was sent to the... Maybe that's why Al Franken was taking notes. He was sending bullet points to Kerry afterwards. One interesting thing he said is that, you know, where America is right now is that he doesn't want the debate out there, the broad ideas. It is not about good and bad. He said it's stupid to talk about good and bad. It's damaging and dangerous to talk about good and bad, good and evil. It's about right and wrong. And we are right. The Democrats are right.
There you go.
Now, there you go.
Let's get to some top of the news stuff there, Riley. What do we got going on in the
We have more, and I know that those who have heard our newscast so far this morning already know this. There is more death in Iraq. At least 35 people are dead, another 140 injured, as a sport utility vehicle packed with artillery shells slammed into a crowd of people waiting to volunteer for the Iraqi military, which means this strike was absolutely no accident.
Man, that's so depressing. The fact that, you know, they could go right to the heart of, you know, sabotaging our best hope for stabilizing Iraq. That is so depressing when I heard that.
Well, it is, again, seems to be the kinds of efforts being made to derail the handover of power, to keep Iraqis out of thinking that they want to find some common cause with this new government. I mean, that's really what this is all about. You keep Iraqis out of the military, what do? You increase the possibility that there's going to be some kind of conflagration the minute the U.S. troops turn their back.
Right, aren't they
aren't they afraid that if they allow Iraqis in the military that, you know, some, you know, renegade factor or some renegade ruler within the ranks would just take them over?
Well, they're afraid. I mean, look, this is an administration that's afraid if they, you know, if they hand over Saddam to the Iraqis, he'll be running the country in a month.
I know. Like, that was a close one.
Yeah.
Boy, that was scary, man.
Yeah. I slimmed down. I've been working out. I'm back and I'm better.
You know, now, too.
If it's that tentative, it's like, it's really.
It's extremely tentative.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Bush has to deal with the 9/11 panel, which he never wanted to exist in the first place. He didn't even want to give them $11 million to do their work. They are meeting in their final public session. They've already concluded that there is no link between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda.
Wait a minute, Mark. What did you say?
No link. Let's say that again.
Wait, but...
No link.
Wait, but didn't the vice president just say, and the president just say that there was?
Yeah, and they also said that they're saying that there was, and the commission saying there was that there wasn't, really isn't that big of a deal.
I think what they mean is there is a link that happened after they attacked Iraq. That must be what they're trying to say, because they keep insisting that there is a link, and there wasn't a link pre 9/11, but after the attack of Iraq, there are many links to al-Qaeda and Iraq.
And Iraq, yeah.
So, well, that must be what they mean. They mean that they are losing the war on terror. Isn't that what they're trying to say? I'm trying to understand.
I'm trying to help them out, aren't you?
Well, they are saying that. They did say, and we should say in fairness, the commission did find evidence of meetings back in the mid-1990s. But staff member Douglas McCaken said that's as far as things got.
There have been reports that contacts between Iraq and al-Qaeda also occurred after bin Laden returned to Afghanistan, but they do not appear to have resulted in a collaborative relationship. And two senior bin Laden associates have adamantly denied any ties existed between al-Qaeda and Iraq. And so far, we have no credible evidence that Iraq and al-Qaeda cooperated on attacks against the United States.
We should add that. So what Bush is trying to say, let's just clear it up, is that there is a connection between Iraq and al-Qaeda that happened because he attacked Iraq for reasons that were lies, and now the world is less safe because of it. So what Bush is saying, okay, I get it, is that he's losing the war on terror. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Well, yeah, he is saying that. But, you know, the other thing that the commission is saying, and this should scare everybody, is, first of all, that the al-Qaeda people that were involved in the hijackings were not nearly as organized as we've been led to believe these past 3 years. Apparently, they had plans to hijack at least 10 planes at one point. They were going to do it earlier. They changed their minds. There was some infighting among them. This is all coming out now from the 9/11 Commission. And they are also saying that the al-Qaeda cells that are in the United States, and in fact, al-Qaeda cells around the world, are planning more attacks in the future against Americans. What are we going to do?
Be scared and try to be practical.
Let's try and be practical.
And elect John Kerry, of course, who's going to reinitiate our stance in the world as good. Still ahead, the author of Bush on the Couch will join us. But right now, we want to hear your thoughts about the September 11th panel and about these lies that the Bush administration seems to be selling. Is the 9/11 panel doing a good job? Is Bush doing a good job? Clearly not. What questions do you want them to answer? 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. 19 past the hour, Mark Maron. I'm here with Mark Riley and Sue Kind of Morning Sedition.
Hey.
Air America, good morning to you. We're taking your calls at 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. Seems that we're talking about the 9-11 Commission, the job they've done, what they haven't done. Bush, the job he's doing. So give us a call right now. It's time for my dream diary. Thank God I get to go to the therapist today. Here we go. I'm at a computer and I'm online and I'm deleting spam, even though I'm supposed to have a program that deletes spam for me, but it clearly doesn't, because here I am deleting spam in my dream. I'm already in the mood to punch the a-hole who invented spam and the a-hole who invented the blocker to delete spam when I hear the voice saying, "You've got mail," only what he says, "You've got mail from strangers judging you." Strangers judging you, and they don't even know you. You've got mail from right-wing douchebags that will prey on your natural insecurities and your lack of sleep. You've got mail that would keep you awake at night, wondering if you should have gone to dental school, and though I probably shouldn't, I clip open the inbox. Four of them just waiting for me, the little bastards. I click on the first one, and this whiny voice says, "Mark, when you criticize fundamentalists, you just hurt the Democrats." And before I can hit the delete key, it flies off the screen. It buzzes around me three times and dives and stings me right in the testicle. Next thing I know, there are three more email hornets buzzing around my head and aiming for my tender spots. And the bad part is that they won't shut up. "You're just as intolerant as the people you criticize." That one spiked me in the eyeball. "You're just a self-hating liberal. You probably work for the Republican Party to sabotage the election for us. I'll never listen to you again." That one got me on the tongue. "Take your Jesus-hating, terrorist-loving liberal crap back to Russia, you pothead homo coward." That one stung me in the other testicle. So I'm hopping around on one leg, I'm blind, and my tongue is swelling up like a pumpkin, and I don't even smoke pot anymore. Wow, I woke up and my bed was filled with a high-speed internet DSL connection.
I was wondering how many people are having to pull over on the hard shoulder with stomach cramps because they're laughing. How many traffic accidents are almost being caused by Mark Maron around the country?
Or the people like you who just don't laugh at all. It's
concentrating. It's just so fast. I mean, I'm not a good laugher.
I'm not laughing anymore since Greg called me a cackling geezer.
Hey, no.
Not playing.
We need your laughter.
I'm not laughing again. I'm not going to be no cackling geezer for nobody.
You just started laughing on there. You used to be, sometimes you'd laugh and you'd pull away from the mic. I'd be like, "No, Riley, get on the mic." Here we go. Nathan in Wyoming, how are you?
Hey. Good, how are you?
Good, man. What's going on?
I just wanted to bring up, remember back in 89 when old Poppy Bush said that he didn't feel atheists should be considered citizens and they definitely were not patriots. That really angered me because my dad spent two tours of duty in Vietnam, so did both my uncles. They're both atheists. Where was George W. Bush, this Bible-thumping Christian that's our president during Vietnam, if he's such a patriot?
He was hiding in the Air National Guard, my friend. Thank you for your call, Nathan. I guess he was a trucker. We get a lot of those calls. Really appreciate your call. And you're absolutely right. These guys will say anything to maintain power, to get political advantage. They will exploit God. They will exploit the poor. They will do whatever they have to do in order to get power. They are not true patriots. George W. Bush is an enemy to democracy.
I got a question.
Yes.
If George W. Bush was in the Texas Air National Guard today, would he be in Texas or Iraq? What do you think?
Couldn't he be in Texas?
He'd be on his ranch still. He'd find some reason.
He'd have his dad call up and go, "Hey, he's had a rough night. Can you
call in sick to the National Guard?"
If your dad is George H.W. Bush
and you live
in Texas. Right. Susan in Massachusetts, how are you?
Hey. I love your station.
Thank you.
I've come to Boston because I'm stuck to my computer. I can't get anything done at home at all.
We're trying.
What I'd like to hear you all discuss today, and I'd love to hear the 9/11 Commission clarify, is the distinction between flight intercept, which they have standard operating procedures, and versus shoot down orders, which takes the president's approval. Every time I hear them talk about NORAD on TV, all they talk about is the shoot down stuff. But there were 60 something flights that were intercepted between January and 9/11. That should have happened automatically. Forget what Bush is doing or Cheney's doing or anybody else. And I don't think that happened.
Well, you're hitting on one of the crucial points that the 9/11 Commission really has yet to completely address, and that is whether or not the whole question of whether or not you can send out fighter jets to shoot something down is one issue. But the question of whether NORAD had a timeline that should have had them react before they did is a very, very open question, no matter what they would have ended up doing.
Let me ask another question, Mark Riley, is that Is it possible that they were thinking, you know, what the political ramifications would have been had they shot down two or three or four American commercial airliners as opposed to assessing the threat and doing it? See, there's some part of my brain that thinks that these guys didn't want to have to explain that.
Well, they may not have wanted to explain it, but what the caller mentioned is the question of whether or not they could have intercepted, not necessarily shot down at first, but certainly intercepted these people and had perhaps changed the outcome of what happened on 9/11.
And they still haven't gotten to the bottom of that? Or we're going to see
no,
that
they haven't gotten to the today.
Today, oh,
today is the final public hearing, and that is the last piece to the puzzle, is this NORAD timeline situation.
866-303-2270. Hello, Mike in New Jersey. How are you?
Good morning, folks.
Hey. Good morning.
I have a couple of points. First of all, the conclusions of the 9/11 Commission about the links to Al-Qaeda and Saddam not being there, and the Bush administration, you know, keep on saying that they are proofs, you know, that they'll say anything, they'll do anything. Second of all, I think this thing with the planes not being scrambled to shoot down the commercial airliners, there's the situation, and I know it's not analogous, completely analogous, the one with Payne Stewart, where his plane was in airspace that he shouldn't have been in, and the plane scrambled after him.
Right.
And it was a situation that was he shot down. And one last point.
Wait a minute now. He crashed, didn't he?
Well, he crashed.
Yeah.
He crashed.
Payne Stewart, the golfers.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah. And one last point. I noticed it was brought up in the news, but it wasn't played out to this angle. That guy who was arrested, I think the Sudanese fellow, for plotting to blow up the mall
in Ohio.
In Ohio, yeah.
It's amazing that he was plotting to blow up a mall in Ohio, a battleground state.
Oh, by the way, that was a Somali, not a Sudanese.
Somali, I'm
sorry. He's a Somalian, and it definitely is suspect beyond coincidence.
Yeah. Well, you know, that we really haven't gotten into that whole arrest thing. Because the day I heard that they had arrested this guy, first thing I'm thinking is Ashcroft is setting something up.
But now I'm starting to think that, you know, maybe he's not affiliated with Al-Qaeda, that he might have just been some sort of, like, you know, extreme prankster. I mean, it's not clear why they stick him into a psychiatric hospital so quickly if they were going to use him as a, you know, a pawn in their political game.
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. They certainly decided not to use him as an intelligence source if they got him in a...
Well, yeah, I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me that they didn't immediately interrogate him, make a decision, string him up under the new Patriot Act. They put him in a mental institution for psychiatric evaluation. Maybe they're trying to figure out whether he can stand up to being used as a patsy.
Well, judging from this, from the kind of high ha-ha caliber of the intelligence they did use, I can't see they'd get anything worse out of someone in a mental institution.
Well, it strikes me as odd that if they were really going to, you know, use him as a political pawn or as some sort of patsy or as an example, that they would have done it quite quickly and just said, you know, we got a guy, here's his apartment, here's the box of stuff, this is the mall, see, we caught him, that goes to show, but he's under psychiatric evaluation, which...
And they'd been checking him out for a while before this, I believe.
Had they? I don't have any information.
I believe that they had you know, not that they had necessarily a full dossier on the guy, but I understand they knew who he was and had been kind of tracking his movements for a minute.
Huh. Well, maybe we'll get more information on that tomorrow. Corey in Arizona, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, man. What's on your mind, buddy?
Back in the drive of Arizona, but I got to tell you, last night, I don't know if any of you saw Hannity and Combs last night, but Oliver North was on.
Ugh.
And, oh, my, I mean, just we have got to get out and vote this time. We've got to get these people out of office.
Oh,
I mean,
my God.
He's getting on there talking about the 9/11 Commission, of course, and his whole rant is basically the 9/11 Commission is this partisan commission that basically isn't, like, you know, telling the truth. They're lying. They're horribly misled. And when Alan Combs keeps pointing out it's a bipartisan commission, he keeps saying, well, they're just misled. They've got to be just misled. I mean, it's just not getting it. And then Sean Hannity, someone needs to get that man a college degree or a thesaurus or something, because if he uses the word politicized one more time, it's unreal to me. He keeps going into this whole thing about the politicized. And of course, with him, we're all supposed to sit back and not question Bush or Cheney or anyone like that. We're just supposed to sit back and let them just conduct the war. And 10 years later, maybe we can speak up then and be actually patriotic Americans.
All right.
It makes me sick.
Thank you so much. Makes me sick too, Gary. I'm sorry we had to cut you off there. We got to go.
Still to come, the Presidential Daily Briefing, Recovery Corner, plus a conversation about Bush on the couch. Don't go anywhere. This is Air America Radio.
Good morning. It's Mornings Edition on Air America Radio. Mark Riley's here. Sue Ellicott is here. I am Mark Maron. We just found out that the Somalian who is in custody has been in custody for 7 months.
Oh, so they weren't just tracking him. They had him in stuff.
Oh, they had him. And apparently when he had his day in court, he started banging his head against the table. And his attorney said, my client is a broken man. He needs help. And, you know, maybe you could help him next. But our guest in the studio is Dr. Justin Frank. He is the author of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. He is clinical professor in the Department of Psychiatry at George Washington University Medical Center. Finally, somebody did it. Someone did what needed to be done. You analyzed the president. And why don't you tell us some of the mental disorders you were able to find?
Well, the findings came after a long analysis, so I'm happy to be here to talk about it. But the main process was to really examine very carefully videotapes of the president, his writings, such as they were. Many of them were written by Karen Hughes, but all of his different appearances, writings about him and by him. And over time, it became pretty clear that there were a couple of fundamental issues. One is that he has a very difficult time organizing his mind. He has a lot of chaos in his mind.
Compartmentalized.
Based on, and so he cannot organize it. So he's done a tried various ways to organize his mind, one of which was, until he was 40, was to use alcohol, actually, to calm himself down. A second way of organizing his mind was to see the world in black and white terms, to make things very simple and split, because otherwise he would be overwhelmed by anxiety and chaos.
Is there a pathology, though? Is he sociopathic? Is he bipolar?
Because right now he's describing me.
Yeah.
Right. There are lots of qualities that everybody has some of that Bush has. But what is so frightening is that he has never made an effort to try to think about himself. The very fact that you could say it's describing you means that you actually think about yourself sometimes. I don't think he could ever say this is describing me.
So he has no self-awareness.
He has no self-awareness.
And what about his stubbornness?
Well, the stubbornness has to do with not allowing anxiety to come in. So one of the things that happens is that if you switch from alcohol to religion, you're still doing the same thing, which is to calm yourself down and try to have certainty in your life. So if you have absolute certainty, there's never going to be anything that's going to challenge you. So any of this information, for instance, you were talking earlier about Oliver North saying the commission was full of it, the 9/11 commission.
Yeah.
The caller said that. Well, I think that that's sort of the way George Bush thinks about everything, that anything that disagrees with him is just wrong and to be dismissed.
So would you say he's like his issues about control, that, you know, in order to keep control of himself, he also has a control freak personality?
Yeah, I think he's actually quite frightened of falling apart.
Yeah, I feel that too when I watch him.
And there are times when times watching him on television, there's this kind of fear in his eyes. The way he behaves has to surround himself with protection. He's got to have everything scripted. He's very frightened of having anything spontaneous.
Talk a little bit about the ego of what it takes to what kind of psychopathology do you have to have in order to be president?
Well, you need to be strong, and you need to have, and he is strong, and you need, and that's what's so paradoxical. You need to be strong. You need to have an ability to be able to ward off the various attacks and assaults. I mean, I was always marveling at somebody like Clinton who could be assaulted left and right for so long and still be able to just keep on being in office. And Bush has a lot of that strength, too. You have to have a lot of drive and a lot of ambition. But the issue is to be in control, to control the people around him, to be in charge. And that's a very important thing. That's a fundamental drive for him that is very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to do with keeping at bay the various demons and fears, because he was undernurtured as a child.
Right.
His sister died when he was 7. There was no discussion of it. There was no opportunity to mourn or to deal with the natural aggression that a kid has. He was relatively unsupervised. That clip that Janine played the other day on the radio, I don't know if people heard that, an interview with Neil Bush when he talked about his brother's strength, and he said that his brother's strength is proved by the fact that when his brother was 10 and he was 4, his brother had a BB gun and would shoot it at the little kids running down the hall.
All right, so when we come back, I want you to, we're going to address what his, you know, psychology, how that affects his policy, which is clearly having a negative impact on the planet.
Right.
And also, we want to take your calls for Dr. Frank here at 866-303-2270, 866-303-2270, about the psychology of George Bush, not your own personal problems. All right, so call us at Air America Radio. Forty-one past the hour. This is Mark Maron. This is Morning's Edition. Mark Riley's here. Sue Ellicott is here. We're taking your calls for Dr. Justin Frank, the author of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President, at 866-303-2270. It's now time for the Presidential Daily Briefing for today, June 17th. This is the highly classified, top-secret document that crosses George W. Bush's desk every morning. Today's PDB from the intelligence community is titled, Truth Threatens Your Carefully Constructed Reality. Mr. President, the panel investigating September 11th has come out flatly rejecting the claim that Iraq had something to do with September 11th. Based on this new development, we have concluded that your presidency faces an increasing threat by an outbreak of infoterrorism some are calling the truth. Our sources tell us this so-called truth is a theoretical construct based on facts. As you are aware from your lifelong struggle with them, facts are uncomfortable and most are in direct contradiction to everything you say. The truth is dangerous on its own, but can be explosive in the hands such as those of Democrats, the 9/11 Commission, or even plucky documentarians. Luckily, the mainstream media only has a passing acquaintance with it, or you'd be in real trouble. In other circumstances, we would recommend that you embrace truth as a weapon yourself, but as you have so little experience with it, you could easily cause more harm than good. We suggest you leave this struggle to your faithful coalition of the lying, the New York Post, Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, who are far more adept at articulating your anti-truth agenda than you are. They merely need to adjust their settings from alarmist to shrill. Respectfully, Office of Homeland Security. Sue Ellicott with the big question.
Yeah, no, I had a couple of things. First of all, I'm baffled. You know, what are the strengths of this guy, George Bush? And what are the negative aspects of his personality that he really can't change, even if he tried to, and the consequences they have on this country and the rest of the world?
Well, I think that the Presidential Daily Briefing gives us a little bit of a clue to the negative aspects that was used today. And one of the negative aspects is an unwillingness to look for the truth. It's not so much that he's lying, but that he's lied to us, but that there's a lying to the self that is occurring.
Yeah.
And that if you do not search for the truth and do not question things, eventually the psyche starves. It's very much like truth is to the mind the way food is to the body. If you don't look for it, you will eventually gradually deteriorate. Your mind will deteriorate. You will not be able to think clearly or fully.
Wow.
And this is a that people need to consistently, that's why you all are asking questions, and that's why the title of the show is so important. It has to do with searching and not just accepting whatever it is that you hear and being curious.
And how does this affect
that
the world?
There's two things. One is that he has a long history of a need to avoid and evade the truth, which
right.
leads him to not be able to take responsibility for his behavior, to constantly blame others, even the sign that says mission accomplished,
right.
or if he's caught by saying, well, tell me about the fact that there's no weapons of mass destruction, Diane Sawyer asks him, and he says, what's the difference? It has to do with his inability to think, because over time, you're not able to think if you don't search for the truth, and that's his biggest weakness, because what happens is there's no way to understand the nuances in the political world, and everything has to be seen in very simple terms, and that's his biggest weakness. So
and he's stubborn in supporting those
simple terms. Well, the stubbornness, because it's in order to protect against anxiety of collapse.
Right,
the most honest moment I think he's had in his entire presidency is when he couldn't answer the question about were there any mistakes you made when he was asked on April 13th in that press conference. I felt he was the most genuine he's been ever. Since he's been president, even though he was stumbling, at least he felt very human for that moment. Not that we want a president to be like that, but it felt like He was very human. As for his strengths,
yeah, what are they?
As for his strengths, he is the people who like him and work with him and know him really like him. They love him because there's something incredibly charming about him. He's got a great sense of humor, I think, although it's laced with sarcasm and aggression. I think his joke that he made when he was running for office about somebody saying he has dyslexia, and he said, yes, if when he's elected president, he will start a 119 emergency line for dyslexics.
But how come you haven't talked about his, you know,
I mean,
his,
he's a funny guy.
His need to be liked. I mean, he seems pretty malleable. I mean, to very extreme agendas and his pursuing of these agendas.
Like, I think his agendas are inside himself. I think that he's malleable to people who think are like-minded thinkers. But I think he's got his own agendas that have to do with structure and order.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Justin Frank is a psychoanalyst and author of Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. Dr. Frank, you mentioned earlier that he has to be in charge. He has to be in control.
Yes.
In that context, how do you explain Dick Cheney, who seems to be controlling him?
Well, I don't know how to explain exactly Dick Cheney, other than that I think that what's so interesting is that this same Dick Cheney served another president, and he's been around for a long time, and I really think that Dick Cheney is unleashed by Bush rather than controlling Bush.
Interesting. Ooh. Let's take a call or two here. Diane in Brooklyn, how are you?
Hi, Diane.
Diane, I guess you answered her question. Roy in White Plains. Roy?
Yes, Bush never went to AA, which means he never had the comprehensive recovery of
a dry drunk
program. So he could have an alcoholic mind now. And how do we know that he's not still drinking?
Good question, Roy. We do Recovery Corner here every day trying to help him out, but it's a good question.
I think that the issue is not about whether or not he's drinking, but the issue is how come nobody asked the question you just asked in the press? The issue is not so much about whether or not he's drinking, but the fear that he might be drinking. And when there's a family of an alcoholic member who's the head of the family, where that person is not treated or not in AA and not in an active program, there's always some suspicion, and that people are tiptoeing around and treat that person as if they're walking on eggshells.
Half the country.
And the entire nation is walking on eggshells about George Bush.
The ones who he hasn't made codependent and believe in him.
Right. Well, that is – and those are – and I think it has to do with an anxiety about finding out whether or not he's drinking. There's certainly – causes for concern that people talk about, with the choking on the pretzel, the falling off of his bicycle, the fact that he needs to spend so much time away from his work, that he really is a kind of a person who could raise in any other circumstance that question would come to mind, and yet it doesn't come to mind. And the issue is not so much whether or not he's drinking, but the fact that we are not able to ask that question. It does not allow for thought.
Yeah. Everything you're telling me makes me very suspect of his ability to hold this office.
Well, I do not think he's really able to. I think that one of the things that happens that it's so important with AA, and I think this question was really central, is that it's about taking responsibility and acknowledging who you are and what you've done and about your drinking. And this is a person who, I think, part of being born again allows you to completely eliminate your past, because you're born again, so you're a new person. So,
right, yeah, it's like it's almost
so
like
you don't
a clear
have to think about your past. That's clearing the decks.
We do that. We sponsor George Bush on the show. I'm his sponsor. You know, as a member of AA, we have Recovery Corner every day. Well, thank you for joining us.
You've got to step up your sponsorship, I think.
Yeah, I'm trying, but, you know, the guy doesn't call
you're not
me.
Doing...
This is Dr. Justin Frank.
Your work is cut out.
I know, but it helps me. You know what I mean? The book is Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. This is Dr. Justin Frank. Very exciting to have you. Buy the book. It's very entertaining and informative. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Come back to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. We've got Recovery Corner coming up.
Great.
Hey, what's up, you guys? It's Mark Maron here on Morning's Edition, Air America Radio, with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott.
Good morning.
Thank you for all the email. Thank you for all your calls. It's been a very exciting few days for reasons that, it's just the topics and what's going on in the world.
For reasons that are beyond our control.
Yeah, almost mystical.
Sadly.
Mystical. No, it's been great. I really appreciate your support, your contempt, whatever. I'm glad you're out there. And I also want to say that my name's Mark, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
And today, you know, as always, I reach out to fellow 12-steppers struggling to stay clean and sober, and I always reach out to my sponsee, George W. Hey, buddy, recovery is one day at a time, and some days are going to be better than others, clearly. But George W., you're self-destructing faster than a Fallujah car bomber. All right, so Dick Cheney goes shooting his mouth off about Iraq having ties to Al-Qaeda, which no one believes anymore. No one. The 9/11 Commission just said that theory is total crap. It's an absurd, discredited idea, like trickle-down economics or creationism. And yet you still defended Cheney and his crackpot ideas. You are in serious denial, George W., and that's a neighborhood you can't afford anymore. All right, now look, I understand loyalty. Cheney's been a good boss. He does most of the heavy lifting. He plays bad cop while you get to dress up and play pilot. But don't enable lies. Don't fall for it. I don't know if I've ever told you this, but as much as I worry about you, I worry about Cheney twice as much. He scares the crap out of me. Stay away from him. He's not good for you. He's not good for me. He's no good. He's evil. Evil. And that's even, I hate to take someone else's inventory, but I don't think I'm out of line here. I think it's pretty clear. Now, you know what? Maybe I got to talk to my sponsor. Remember, denial is not a river in Egypt. Sobriety is a journey, not a destination. Humility is our acceptance of ourselves. And, you know, please get to a meeting. Will you help us out? Help the country out.
It needs some help. I mean, we have these diplomats today. The 27 senior U.S. diplomats and military officers have condemned Bush, condemned his foreign policy, saying the United States has never been so isolated in the world. And there's not even a jot of evidence that George Bush cares about this.
A jot?
Talk about who these people are. I mean, these are real dudes. These are like past ambassadors. These are military people. These are not just anybody. These are commanders-in-chiefs of the United States Central Command in 1991, Assistant Secretary of Defense, Assistant Secretary of Defense, Chief of Staff of the United States Air Force. These are not nobodies.
Yes, listen to this. This is a quote from them. Instead of building upon America's great economic and moral strength to lead other nations in a coordinated campaign to address the causes of terrorism and to stifle its resources, the administration, motivated more by ideology than by reasoned analysis, struck out on its own. And it talks about the manipulation of the American public and the rest of the world in the Bush administration's use of uncertain evidence about Iraq's weapons programs to justify a, quote, ill-planned and costly war from which exit is uncertain.
Yep.
You can't get much clearer than that.
And these are like, you know, credible people who have worked within the military establishment, within the political establishment, in international politics. You have ex-ambassadors from Russia, from Greece, from Bangladesh. I mean, these are not just, you know, crackpots. I mean, Colin Powell tried to dismiss this as sort of like it's just an opinion of some people that aren't
27 guys.
These are, these are people who had the status of Colin Powell.
Yes, and these are clear. It's just a clear, you know, indication and validation that this president has destroyed our credibility on the planet.
Want to talk credibility?
Yes,
let's
sir.
Talk credibility.
You go for it.
How credible do you think it is that Halliburton got $8 billion worth of contracts for Iraq, and it went to the vice president's office and only got as far as Scooter Libby? How credible is that?
Well, that's because Dick Cheney was in his office with his fingers in his ears going, la, 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 la,
no,
la, I don't
exactly.
hear it, la, 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 la.
I saw that, and their justification was that Cheney was not informed. That was the quote that came out earlier in the last week.
Now, Scooter Libby is the chief of staff.
No, but you know what? I just had this image of Cheney walking in and this kind of memo being on his desk with arrows and post-its pointing towards it so that he knew exactly what was going on. But sure, officially, he wasn't informed. I don't believe he didn't know. It wasn't somehow communicated to him, whether it was in semaphore or deaf sign language or whatever the heck it was. But he may not have been told verbally, but the arrows pointed to the memo.
So why wouldn't his chief of staff tell him? Why wouldn't Scooter Libby? Does he not know that Cheney had a pre-existing...
To protect Cheney.
Is that some sort of secret agenda? Is it understood within this administration that whatever happens in undersecretaries or assistants or anybody else,
or
chief of staff, don't let me know about it if it could come back to haunt me. You're going to have to take the hit on this one. I mean, is that policy within this administration that you guys know your job, all right? Well, you know exactly what the agenda is here. It stops with you if it can hurt me later.
Yeah. It's exactly that. It's the lesson of Iran-Contra. It's, protect the boss. Obfuscate. Don't make it clear the person knew, was officially told.
But also in this administration, none of these guys go down either. Cambone should have gone down. Rumsfeld should have gone down. But at the very least, we should have been given Cambone.
So was this protect the boss, protect your boss even if he looks stupid afterwards?
Yeah, but they just assume that'll dissipate.
Yeah, I don't think he does look stupid. I think he looks strong.
We're coming back for another hour of Morning Sedition straight ahead. Mark Maron's favorite subject, religion, plus the presidential palm pilot and countdown to democracy. This is Air America Radio.
Hey, I'm Mark Maron with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. It's 6 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition. The rapture is coming. Today, we'll tell you what the president's palm pilot says. We'll update you on the countdown to democracy. We'll rip today's liberal agenda fresh from the fax machine, all because we love you. That's all coming up right now. Hello, Mark Riley. Hello, Sue Ellicott.
Hello. Good morning.
Got some mail here. Dear friends, I used to wake up with my radio set to NPR, and I would wake up so grumpy because of the stranglehold this corrupt president has on the American, nay, global public. Now I wake up inspired to do something about it. You rock my world. I have a small request. Can you please note the following information on John Kerry's website? Go to John Kerry's website and, you know, see what the guy has to say. He's not getting enough attention in the national press, but he definitely has, you know, a lot of things to say and rally the Democrats. And I myself am doing a benefit for John Kerry. Comics for Kerry is Tuesday night, June 22nd. I will be appearing with Richard Belzer, Eddie Brill, Jim David, who's been on this show, Dean Edwards from Saturday Night Live, Susie Essman from Curb Your Enthusiasm, Jim Gaffigan, very funny man, Judy Gold, who was here yesterday. We will all be there June 22nd, 7 o'clock p.m.
Hey, where's the brothers?
Dean Edwards.
Oh, okay.
And the brother.
Oh, the brother.
There's the brother.
No, there's two brothers.
Rasheed Wallace from the world champion Detroit Pistons?
Drew Frazier. Is also a brother.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Two brothers.
We got two brothers on the show. Two brothers, two Jews, a gay guy and a gay woman. We're all set. We've got the whole range.
Whoa, diversity.
Three Jews, me and Belzer and Essman. But it's going to be a great night, and you can go to www.comicsforkerry.org if you want information on that. And what else we do?
By the way, can I say a shout out to Greg from Maryland? Mm-hmm. Greg, don't worry about a thing, man. I love you. The whole cackling geezer thing was just I realized when he said that I had become the person I used to mock as a young man.
Yeah.
You know, it was the geezer part.
Doesn't that happen to us all?
Yeah, I think it was a term of endearment. It was.
Here we go. I was on hold to make a comment about right-wing Christians and the politicians debate them this morning, but time ran short. I would, however, like to make it anyways. As a Christian, what grills my cheese...
That's a good one.
Is that Wisconsin?
It's from Maine. Are people who make a public show of their faith, whether for money or votes. According to two accounts in the Bible, in the teachings of Jesus, he specifically tells his followers to not do that. One source is Matthew 6, verses 5 and 6, and that's the only one I see in here. So if you want to go to your New Testament and check that out. One other thing here, because we're leading into religion again.
Yes.
Hi, I'm a homeschooling mother. The homeschooling world is dominated by militant Christians. There is a major homeschooling network in New York in which you have to sign a statement of faith. The major homeschool conventions are held by Christian organizations. The major homeschool advocacy group is Christian. They don't believe in evolution. Religion dominates lots of educational materials and discussions. Curriculum authors need to prove that they are Christians. If not, they will be shunned. I had to leave a listserv because they kept ranting about Harry Potter and its pagan message. Sue Ellicott's husband edited that movie.
Yes, clearly, he is in fact a warlock. I can vouch for the kind of insidious anti-religious aspect of Harry Potter. It's evil. It's deep and evil.
Yeah, and then there's other emails. You know, here's another guy. If Kerry takes on Bush vis-a-vis the religion issue, then he legitimizes it as a political strategy. I think he has to continue to keep a personal issue, reemphasize the Bill of Rights, and delegitimize religion as a political tool. There are far more pressing issues facing the national public. Yeah, they concentrate on what unites us as opposed to that which divides us. I think we should really be united in maintaining the distinction and the separation of church and state. I don't think that this issue is necessarily about personal religion per se, but it is a bit about, like, this example here, the Southern Baptist Convention, you know, rejects the schooling pullout. This is a convention of Southern Baptists that represents 16 million religious people. 8,000 people were in attendance. George Bush piped in his message to them, supporting the fact that, you know, they don't like gay people. They don't want gay people to be married. They think it's a sin. They believe that the Bible is truth. They believe that pro-choice is a heinous, you know, crime against God. And they actually, this is where it really gets frightening for me, all right? Early this year, a statement denouncing government schools as officially godless had been proposed by retired Air Force General T.C. Pinckney of Alexandria, Virginia, and attorney Bruce Short of Spring, Texas. And this is an attorney and a retired Air Force general who are trying to tell people to school their children at home in strict Christianity, in teaching the Bible as truth. This is a military general and a lawyer. In my mind, what's next is when they get old enough, we'll show them what uniform to wear and how we're going to take down this country from the inside and make it a theocracy. Maybe I'm a reactionary, but I'd rather err on the side of that and take your criticism for being a Christian basher to get this message out, because I think this is insane importance. If you're a religious person, if you're a Christian, these Christians should be right there in your sights and tell them that they're not being real Christians, that they're hypocritical. And if they want to vote with the Bible, as this thing recommends, it says, here's the tenets of their talking points. Urge all U.S. Christians to register and vote in accordance with biblical values. All right, how about not lying? How about not misleading the country? How about, making morality across the board the agenda? How about, prosecuting corporate fraud, prosecuting corporate criminals? Why doesn't this morality go all the way up to the top here?
How about not being greedy and having massive tax cuts for the richest people in the country?
Yeah, there's so much hypocrisy within it, and that's not the only religion story. Riley, you got that one there on no communion for Kerry? We were talking about that earlier. See, I tend to think that Kerry's not politicizing Catholicism necessarily. He's a Catholic, and I think that the Catholic Church should give communion to all Catholics. The issue, here's where it becomes a personal issue. If you have a problem with abortion, or you're on the fence about something, or something's eating your soul, you go to confession. It's between you and your priest and your relationship with your God. I think that for them to deny any Catholic communion is making themselves political.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And again, this isn't the entire church, we should say. This is a group within the church. They're anti-abortion activists. They are denouncing the, quote, hypocrisy of John Kerry on the abortion issue and urging Cardinal Edward Egan, who's the cardinal that runs the Archdiocese here in New York, to deny communion to John Kerry. But, Mark, I want to try and tie a couple of other religious things.
Yeah, rein me in. Will you focus?
No. This is something we really haven't gotten into yet.
Yeah.
You know that Paul Johnson, of course, is being held hostage.
Horrible.
In Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
There was a story that moved that said that if he were to be executed, the town that he lives in central New Jersey, might likely perpetrate racist attacks against people they thought to be Arabs in retaliation.
That sounds like an advertisement.
Well, this is what the people in this town, it's called Tuckerton,
right.
New Jersey.
But when you make a story like that, it almost puts a suggestion in someone's head. I wouldn't have thought that.
Well,
have anything to base that on?
Well, they're saying they talk to people.
Oh.
Reuters talked to people down there, and they said, there was a group of guys who already got busted down there during the aftermath of September 11th, except they were not attacking Arabs. They were attacking Sikhs.
Because of the head,
they can't tell the difference.
They can't tell the difference. Sikhs, of course, are Indian. They are not Arab. Now, the thing that's important about this to me from a religious aspect,
yes,
or from a religious standpoint, is where are the Christian clergy standing up telling people you do not attack folks based on either their perceived Arabness,
their hat,
yeah, or the turban that they wear, or the religion that they practice. Where is, you want to talk about people going and subscribing to and voting in accordance to biblical values? Speak up on that.
Right.
I think Kerry should be seeking out tolerant members of the Catholic Church, tolerant clergy, taking communion where people are kind of modern, human, compassionate, and just refusing or saying he absolutely doesn't want to take communion from any intolerant member of the Catholic Church anyway.
We're taking your calls, 866-303-2270 on all God-related news, because it is God week, apparently. So give us a call, even if you're not a deity of some sort. How's that? Yeah? Call us here on Air America Radio. We'll put you on the air. 866-303-2270. Good luck, Johnny Ramone. Johnny Ramone battling cancer today. I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning Sedition. I'm with Mark Riley, Sue Ellicott here on Air America Radio. We're taking your calls at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-AAR. What am I saying? 866-AAR. What? 866-303-2270. Like I haven't said it a million times. I still got to look at the paper. Right now, I've got the presidential Palm Pilot right in my hand. That was gotten to me by my buddy in the Oval Office. Here's the schedule for today for the president. 8 a.m., wake up, stay on message. Al-Qaeda definitely had ties to Ronald Reagan. Wait, that has to be wrong. I'm happy to stay on message, but Carlos got to check these things. 10.05 a.m., meet with cabinet. Ask them what the message is, the real one. 1.15 p.m., speak to National Federation of Independent Businesses. Ask Rove if I can walk on stage to BTO's Taking Care of Business. 2.20 p.m., return to White House, try to cheer up after encounter with people who actually succeeded in business. 3.30 p.m., fly to Spokane, Washington, have crew show the movie 13 going on 30 again. 5.15 p.m., arrive at Fairchild Air Force Base, Spokane. Note, I am flying from Washington to Washington. Prepare humorous remark noting the amazing similarity. 6.20 p.m., make appearance at fundraiser for state Senate race. Note, when reading speech, do not look down at note cards and say the words, insert candidate's name here. 7.45 p.m., fly from Spokane to Seattle. Note, you're still in Washington. The joke still works. 8.30 p.m., fly from Seattle to Fort Lewis. Prepare a speech for soldiers tomorrow. Words to avoid, Abu Ghraib, extended tour, quagmire, car bomb. 9.30 p.m. West Coast time. Spend the next 3 hours figuring out if I'm going to bed 3 hours earlier or 3 hours later. That's Presidential Palm Pilot. We're taking your calls, 866-303-AAR0, about religion, superstition, power, you know, mystical things. Jerry in Michigan, how are you?
Hey, Jerry.
Yes. The way I look at it is that I don't see the Republicans as being anything religious. So often I've heard people say, well, I'm a Republican because I'm religious. And I find that their argument, Adolf Hitler claimed he was religious. And just they're hijacking the term of Christianity. I think if anyone is religious,
yep,
the last thing they should do is vote and support the Republican Party, because
that's absolutely
their
right.
Agenda is total
anti-democracy.
To anything of any of the monotheistic religions.
That's absolutely right. I think you're right. They're exploiting religion to further their political agenda. And the problem is, when someone's a religious fanatic and believes that the Bible is literal truth, that is, you know, sort of believing that, you know, it is little truth in the face of rational truth. That means that if they've decided that a president is representing them on a religious level, it doesn't matter what he says. It's true. They've already suspended their disbelief. Carlos in Brooklyn, how are you? Carlos, are you there, Carlos?
Yeah, hi,
hey.
Gang.
Hey.
You know, what really bothers me is the cynical use of the church. They don't speak out against the war in Iraq or the death penalty, which kills a lot of people. They have this great respect for life, they say. Also, the Catholic Church was pretty quiet when it was pro-choice Republicans like Pataki and Giuliani. I never heard about banning, you know, communion for them. So I think this just goes with the fanaticism, like the Christian Coalition voter guides. But if they really have respect for life, you know, they shouldn't be endorsing Bush.
I think you're absolutely right. Thank you. That's a good issue. The death penalty is a really, you know, pivotal.
Although I should say, in fairness, I believe the Pope did come out in
against
opposition to. Yeah, he
well,
did,
that's
he
right. And Bush
against.
Defied him. You remember with Carla Faye Tucker, who
yeah.
was on death row in Texas. She had changed her life. She was doing Christian missionary work in
that's
jail.
Right. And the Pope specifically asked that she not be executed.
And Bush said, nope, sorry, Pontiff.
Yep.
She's going to fry.
And now he has to come back and ask for favors.
And he went and asked him for favors, and I bet the Pope said, Tucker. One word.
Tucker.
Absolutely. He was absolutely against the war. I just hope the Pope has melted down that presidential medal that Bush gave him the other week and sold it.
I'm just hoping the Pope can get up. Tom in Oklahoma, how are you, Tom?
Okay, how you all doing?
We're doing pretty good today.
Good. Okay, well, my comment is that I'm a Christian.
Yeah.
I believe in the deity of Jesus Christ.
Yes.
I believe that also, this is maybe a little misspoken here, but in a tolerant society, there is no justice. Because you can be tolerant all the way through.
Right. So you mean, in a tolerant society, there are no judges?
No, there is no, you can't have any justice at all in a tolerant society.
Okay.
Because if you're tolerant, where's the justice?
I'm going to try and figure that out.
But basically, well, it seems as though you're taking an extreme view that if you are tolerant, then you can forgive everybody for absolutely everything. You know, you can find mitigating circumstances. You can't surely be saying that if someone commits murder, there is no punishment and they stay free in society because you have to understand that person needs to be forgiven, are you?
Well, no, because what you're looking at also is that there's under certain circumstances, yeah, we'll let him go.
Right.
What about an abused wife? Well, that becomes very tolerant. So
that's
you
true.
Look at certain
there is justice because there's a different set of circumstances for each individual crime, and you look at them compassionately and intelligently and make a decision.
What's your point, Tom?
Okay. My point is that I'm personally against abortion, but I'm not a woman. I think a woman has a right to choose.
Okay.
I believe that every Christian has a right to choose everything because that's the greatest thing God gave us was free agency, the ability to choose.
Right.
Now, to condemn someone or to try and legislate morality within a person's heart and in their mind is really dangerous.
Okay.
I think all through history, religions have tried to do that. Religion is man-made.
Right.
God make religion.
Right. So it's exploiting religious belief in order to assume political power. That was an intelligent argument there. Good job, Sue. Karen, New Jersey. Karen, how are you?
Good. I'm a United Methodist clergy person.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm one of those people who stands up in the pulpit,
yes,
and preaches against the war,
mm-hmm,
preaches against intolerance,
mm-hmm,
preaches against people using the Bible as a weapon against each other,
mm-hmm,
and is trying to get, in my personal life, Kerry elected. I think Bush using his religion is the same thing that many conservative evangelical Christians do. They pick one part of the Bible,
mm-hmm,
and they never look at the rest of it. They pick and choose.
Yeah, just so it accommodates their political agenda.
Yeah, I lived in Kansas for a while, and
yeah.
I don't know if you know who Fred Phelps is, but Fred Phelps is a very anti-homosexual. He has this horrendous agenda. God hates fags.
Yeah, oh yeah, that guy with the signs.
Okay.
Right.
He picked it in my church once.
Oh.
We went outside to try to talk to him. And it's like talking to a door.
I was thinking brick wall.
An angry door.
Brick wall. Yeah, they don't have the intellect, and I don't want to, not all, but especially that group, and some that I've talked to, they don't have the intellect to see the disingenuousness and the disassociation that they have when they look at one section of the Bible and not another.
That's because their belief enables them to be ignorant. They choose to be ignorant in because that's what they believe.
Well, life is so much simpler if you don't think.
Oh, she gone? Oh, that was
earlier.
Great. Oh, there you are. I'm sorry. We lost you for a second. What were you saying?
One of the comments you made earlier is where are the clergy who are speaking out against this stuff? There are many of us, and we're trying, but it's difficult to talk to that group of folks.
Right.
Because they refuse to see beyond. I mean, they've got blinders on and cannot see beyond their point.
No,
that's because
they're
fanatics. They're fanatics. Thanks for your call. We got a priest online here in Florida. Clayton, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind, my friend?
Well, I just wanted to explain. I'm a liberal Catholic priest. That is a priest in the liberal Catholic Church, and we're quite different from Roman Catholics or other forms of Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
We're much more tolerant,
mm-hmm,
and we don't have the same hang-ups that some of these other churches have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know, we feel that, you know, it's still all about forgiveness. It's all about love, and it's all about being, you know, good to one another and not spouting hate and spouting this garbage and rhetoric.
Well, thanks for sharing that with us. Really appreciate it. We got some breaking news we got to go to. Clayton, priest in the Liberal Catholic
Church.
Yeah,
I appreciate that. Yeah. Well, the September 11th panel is making news again. They are now saying that the Pentagon's Air Defense Command missed a chance to intercept at least one of the September 11th hijacked planes. Report released by the commission at its final public hearing offered an account of the day America suffered its worst terrorist attack, and it details a series of missteps by aviation and military officials that squandered precious moments. This is what that whole timeline thing.
Right.
Between the time air traffic controllers became aware of the first hijacking and the crash of United Airlines Flight 93 into a Pennsylvania field, which was more than an hour later. There seems to be some question, for example, Vice President Dick Cheney eventually did issue an order to shoot down hijacked planes. But military pilots didn't get it until after the last of the four planes crashed in Pennsylvania.
I'd like to see Cheney get out of that one.
Well, why didn't Bush give the order?
He was away.
He was
spirited
in
away. He was reading to school kids, remember?
Yeah.
And then they whisked him away,
well,
and Cheney took over.
Yeah.
That's questionable.
Well, he got on the phone to Cheney and said, what do we do?
Hey, just take it from me, baby.
Yeah.
So we're coming back, right, Riley?
Still to come, David Korn on that September 11th panel, The Liberal Agenda, and Countdown to Democracy. Stay tuned. This is Air America Radio.
Mark Maron here, Morning's Edition. Good morning. Mark Riley's here. Sue Ellicott is here. I forgot to mention the Comics for Carrie is at Caroline's Comedy Club here in Manhattan on June 22nd at 7 o'clock p.m. And the website is www.comicsforcarrie.org. I will put it up on my website. Thank you for the email. But it is here in New York City at Caroline's Comedy Club in Times Square. Joining us now from his home in suburban D.C. is David Korn. He is the Washington editor for The Nation magazine and is the author of The Lies of George W. Bush, Mastering the Politics of Deception, which is now available in an expanded paperback edition. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning. Actually, I'm in an undisclosed location, so please.
They're hiding you now, too, huh?
No, don't blow it.
So tell us what's going on with the panel today.
Well, today they're having hearings that are beginning just now on the what happened with NORAD and the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, in terms of tracking the hijacked planes and why there was no better communication between the two. If you look carefully at what we reporters call the TikTok, the timeline of what happened with some of the flights, it really seems rather obvious that particularly in Flight 77, the one that crashed into the Pentagon, that there was something like a 20-25 minute delay between when the FAA knew something was wrong with that plane and knew also that planes had already crashed into the World Trade Towers, and when NORAD, which is the Air Defense Command, started to do something about it. And it's a question that's been hanging out there for a couple of years now. And I remember right after 9/11, there was a hearing, a congressional hearing, in which the FAA people were asked about this, and they said, ask NORAD. And the head of NORAD, general, said, well, ask the FAA. So I assume that today the 9/11 Commission is going to try to get to the bottom of that and other things, too, why the Air Defense Command system was so weak that morning. And also, I hope they get to this. I don't know if they will, but as smart listeners of Air America probably know by now, the fact that al-Qaeda and other terrorists were interested in attacks like these was in the intelligence reporting going back to the mid-90s.
Yeah.
And so a question is, how come no one in the federal government, in the military, ever sat around and said, let's think about this. Let's come up with a plan in case, in the unlikely event.
Right, some projections.
Like this happens.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. David Korn, this commission has been around for a year and a half. They've talked to 1,000 witnesses, reviewed more than 2 million documents. You pointed out one very specific problem between the FAA and NORAD. The commission has pointed out a number of other shortcomings in both intelligence, preparedness, et cetera. What are the odds that any of this stuff is actually going to get fixed, assuming it all winds up in the commission's final report?
Well, we're talking about government bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
And when George Tenet testified, the CIA director, it was a month or two back, he said that, he had had a plan to improve the CIA after 9/11 and that it still was going to take up to 5 years to do that. And, the commissioners went, whoa, still 5 years. I mean, government always moves exceedingly slow, and one of the hardest things to do is get one bureaucracy to talk to another and do it in the right fashion at the right time. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be pessimistic about the ability to learn the right lessons from this.
Mm-hmm.
But you also, I think, have to, be realistic and realize that a small group like al-Qaeda, which is, kind of small leadership, doesn't have a lot of levels of bureaucracy to it, is always able to move faster, be more flexible, change on a dime than a large, unwieldy government agency that has to interact with the White House and the State Department, the Defense Department, and other intelligence services overseas. So, I mean, the best we can hope for is that they at least, you know, are focused and fixated on the right targets, and from that, everything, you know, might flow better.
David, help me with whether or not I was dreaming when I saw a story about a custodian, I believe at one of the airports here in New York, who said he saw one of the 9/11 hijackers a couple of months before 9/11. Asking about public restrooms in that airport. Supposedly he reported it to the FBI, and that's as far as it went. Did you hear anything like
There are lots of stories like that, of people reporting things to the FBI beforehand. I did a story after 9/11 about some folks in Omaha who reported some Middle Eastern men looking at plans of 747s and were really concerned about where the best seats were if you wanted to be close to the cockpit, and you know, and they were extremists in terms of being anti-American and reported that to the FBI. Nothing happened there. So I don't know. To be a little sympathetic, if the FBI gets 20,000 tips a year in like of these sort, you know what's it to do? I think now they'll be again. I think it's a matter of being sensitive to the right type of threats, so that when you do then have the right tips, you're able to jump on them. But that requires a certain amount of presence of mind and knowing what to look for and where to be looking. Again, because they had, because the CIA had indications and the FAA for years that this was the type of one type of attack that Al Qaeda and others were interested in, they should have been looking for tip-offs, for hints in this particular area, but that never really happened. And if they had, then they would have had a decent chance, I think, of stopping a plot like this. They would have had a decent chance because, as we know, there are a lot of indicators that we see now after the fact that look rather obvious about flight training, and that we let several of the 9/11 guys got in. The CIA had been watching them, but they didn't tell the FBI, so the FBI didn't know to look for them. It was just a real mess up. Mm-hmm.
David Korn, you have covered the whole of the 9/11 commissions from the beginning, and you're the editor of The Nation magazine in Washington. Who, in the end, is going to bear the most responsibility for allowing 9/11 to happen?
I think the guy who's going to get the knife in the back, it's kind of happened already, is going to be George Tenet.
Yeah.
And in some ways, it's not inappropriate. But he get a lot of the blame because he was in charge of the agency that should have been the lead agency on this. But at the same time, George Bush, deserves credit or the opposite of credit for the priorities that he established in his presidency. And it's really quite clear from previous 9/11 reports. And if people go look at the Nation.com website in my previous columns, I go into this. It's really quite clear that he came in and that his guys were more concerned with Star Wars, that was Rumsfeld at DOD, and John Ashcroft was more concerned with crime than terrorism at the Justice Department. And there's no telling that if they were more interested in terrorism and had picked up on some of Dick Clark's warnings and the increasing concern that the Clinton administration had at the end of the day, and the Clinton administration made a lot of mistakes too. I'm not going to absolve them here. Then things might have been different. So the same way that you get credit for the economy when it goes good on your watch or bad on your watch, there is a certain amount of credit and blame that can be assigned to the Bush administration here for not being on the ball enough.
For being negligent. Yes. Thank you very much, David Korn.
And let me just tell people that I've written a lot about this commission, too, and Bush's recent lies about 9/11. And they can go to my blog at the bushlies.com website, bushlies.com.
Thanks a lot. David Korn, the Washington editor for The Nation magazine, the author of The Lies of George W. Bush, Mastering the Politics of Deception, now available in an expanded paperback edition. Please come back. We have lots more fun information and horror here on Air America Radio.
Stand by.
It is now 45 past the hour. This is Mark Maron talking to you from Air America Radio, the studios. This is Morning's Edition. I'm here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott.
Our lavish studios.
Yes.
Hey.
It's now time for the countdown to democracy. As the deadline for handover of power to the Iraqis approaches, we'd like to explore various issues and opportunities the Iraqis and Americans will face. Today's issue is ex-leaders and what to do with them. Hey, hold on, all right? It's not what you're thinking. Please, as you make the transition from dictatorship to democracy, one thing you'll find is that you will accumulate ex-leaders. These are well-known public figures who are no longer in office yet are not riddled with bullets. All right. Okay, exactly. Now, here in America, we're positively lousy with ex-presidents. Heck, we just lost one, and they're still crawling out of the woodwork. Luckily, for the most part, they amuse themselves. Just build them a library, and they're happy as clams. All right, I'm getting to you. Just take it easy. At this point, you guys have only one former leader to deal with. Oh, but he's a handful. I don't think he can follow our ex-president's examples. Saddam wouldn't look natural on a golf course, and I can't see him building mud huts for homeless marsh Arabs. All right? What he might do is follow Bill Clinton's example and write a book. Now, that's a tell-all I think everyone would want to read. I mean, after all, lots of great books have been written in prison. All right. Well, good luck. God bless. This is day 13 in our countdown to democracy. Live free or die.
Ow.
Just call me a cackling old geezer.
So, John Kerry, the pressure's on for him not only to take the message more national, but I guess he doesn't have complete control over how they cover him, but also to pick a vice president. And I guess a lot of people are leaning towards John Edwards.
Now, a lot of people are leaning toward John Edwards, but he's been talking to different folks. And by the way, the other day, he actually did go down to the Jersey Shore, I think down by Atlantic City, and articulated a very sane and rational plan for re-empowering the economics of the middle class in this country. So we ought to let people know that he hasn't been asleep for the last couple of days. He's actually been doing things.
Well, he's got to convince the middle class that George Bush is not their friend and that if they look at the record over the years, they've been the ones that have been screwed.
Yeah. So Kerry met with Congressman Dick Gephardt the mm-hmm. other day. Now, he is not anyone's odds-on favorite. Gephardt flamed out during the primary so quickly that I wonder sometimes whether people really are as behind him as they are others.
Gephardt's one of those guys like always there. You don't like him, you don't hate him, but he doesn't bother you. He's just, oh, yeah, that's Dick Gephardt over there. He's just hanging out.
But he was supposed to have the union backing. You know, he was a big union guy. I forgot which. I think it was the Teamsters. I don't want to misspeak about who endorsed him when he was running for president. But he was a big union guy, uh-huh. and the unions never delivered for him. It seemed like they went out to the
they supported them, but they didn't. It didn't really happen.
No, and he met with John Kerry, and he said, "quote I'm happy to do it if he wants me to do it," which I guess is what anybody would say after he interviewed for the vice presidency.
So he also said, "I'd be happy just to hang out."
Yeah, I'm equally happy not to do it, exactly. Just help another way.
That's exactly Dip Gephardt.
He's just a happy guy.
Absolutely equivocal.
And now John Edwards, of course, is the lady's pick. You know, he's a charmer. He's slick. You know, he's got an earnestness or an apparent authenticity about his life experience. He's a great speaker.
And he stayed in the primaries essentially longer than anybody else this side of Al Sharpton and Dennis Kucinich.
But would he look good in the big chair? Could he handle it? Could he drive it if he had to?
You know, that was one of the questions that people asked when he was running. Yeah. He was first-term senator, I believe. He was a personal injury lawyer, I think that was the basic thing
was he's hot, but he's green.
Yeah, yeah. And, they, you know, folks.
Sounds
but
good.
Now there's some other green folks coming by, too, apparently.
Yeah.
Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack made mm-hmm. the rounds in Washington. Wouldn't say if he was meeting with Kerry. And then Governor Kathleen Sebelius of Kansas was also in Washington with Governor Vilsack. She said she was not meeting with John Kerry. It'd be an interesting idea to have a female vice presidential candidate from the heartlands, from Kansas of all.
Could you get elected?
I prefer the idea of Halton Green myself.
It still really is a question. I mean, could a president with a vice presidential woman candidate, could they get elected?
I don't know. Yeah, Walter Mondale was the only one that ever actually tried. Other than Shirley Chisholm, and she was actually running for president. And it didn't work out well for Geraldine Ferraro Walter Mondale.
It could work as long as the woman's husband doesn't have tax issues,
is
the answer to that.
Now, Senator Bob Graham is also expected to meet with Kerry in the next few days. And Bob Graham has a wave of support, too, because he's from Florida. And remember that George Bush was where yesterday?
Florida.
27 electoral votes, important state. Bob Graham has been extremely popular. He's been a governor and a senator from that state. Didn't do all that well running for president, but might be an interesting person because he's got, you know, he's got some extensive background on a number of different important issues, including intelligence, by the way.
He's a pro.
Yeah,
he's a pro. Bill Richardson, too, right?
Yeah, from New Mexico. Although I understand he had pulled out of it. I thought Richardson had taken his name out of contention. But see, what's interesting about this is that Kerry was one of the people that Al Gore interviewed in 2000 and obviously was not chosen. Kerry, I think, learned a little bit from that experience and is taking that experience with him as he starts to scout around now. And he's keeping the choices pretty close to the vest.
So we're going to come back. I think, why don't we talk a little bit about the, you know, the Reagan family's, you know, being pissed off about the use of footage of Reagan in a recent ad and the liberal agenda and our goodbyes for the day after this on Air America
that.
Radio.
How sad.
Good morning. We're coming in for landing here on Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. This is Mark Riley here in Sioux Ellicott. We're on Air America Radio.
Hello.
Hey.
The shamelessness that is pervasive in the conservative world is mind-blowing. The ultra-conservative interest group, Club for Growth, starting Wednesday, is going to, they've held it, but they were planning on running an advertisement using footage of Ronald Reagan, the Berlin Wall, and comparing George W. Bush to Ronald Reagan in the fight against communism, fight against terrorism. But Ronald Reagan's family is criticizing the use. All right, these people, you know, the administration and these ultra-right special interest groups are just, they're shameless. They will use whatever they need to use to maintain power. You know, they'll use Jesus, they'll use the victims of 9/11, they'll use dead soldiers, they'll use dead Reagan, they'll use whatever they
name.
Want.
Club yeah. for growth. It should be club for atrophy or club for stagnation.
Yeah, but it's mind blowing that they don't have. They'll just go ahead and do it. And now, you know, Nancy Reagan, out of respect, these people think they own the legacy of Ronald Reagan, which, if we had time, we could prove was not that great, anyways. But certainly, this president, is nothing, you know, like Ronald Reagan.
Okay, I'm dreaming that Nancy's going to just go for Kerry. She's going to denounce the Republican Party and say she's voting for Kerry. I know it won't happen, but I'm dreaming.
That's Sue Alcott's dream diary.
It won't happen, but it does point out something very interesting and very important as we head into this season. Not everybody is on the bus with this guy. Not even the people you would think would be on the bus.
With Bush?
George W. Bush. They are not. Look, the Club for Growth, first of all, as far as I'm concerned, one of the most low-life organizations in the universe.
Can we say dirtbags?
Yeah. They will not. What they do is go after moderate Republicans. See, they don't go after Democrats. What they do is say, all right, you got a moderate Republican representing a congressional district or a state in the Senate or whatever. We want a conservative Republican. So they run conservatives against them in primaries. I've seen them do
that. We'll help you find your hate.
Yeah. And you know, what they do is knock out. And this is their mission,
yeah,
to knock out the moderate wing of the Republican Party. So you've got 50 Rick Santorums sitting up in there.
He gives me the creeps, man.
He should.
He's one of those guys where you see him talk, you know, his sort of, you know, right-wing agenda, and you're like, who is he, a mentoring candidate? Who programmed this cat? Who flipped the switch in that dude's head?
Sean Hannity.
Hannity's another one of these robots. Rush's another one. You know, they just plow through and they'll just try to sell the talking point lies that are distributed to them.
Right. Now they're trotting out Oliver North again. That smacks of desperation on the right-wing talk shows.
Anything but that. By the way, talking about things political, well, there was a story earlier today that we didn't quite get to in terms of the CIA director asking Donald Rumsfeld to order the military to secretly hold a suspected terrorist in Iraq. They have now confirmed that Tenet did, in fact, do that, and Rumsfeld, in fact, did it.
No, Rumsfeld. But he didn't know about the terror. He didn't know about Rumsfeld. The abuse in Abu Ghraib.
There is the liberal agenda.
Uh-oh.
And I have it right here. Now it's out of the machine. Here it is. Get your notebooks and your pencils from the Streisand compound. One, praise NBA champion Detroit Pistons management for hiring so many qualified African Americans. Two, strenuously deny that Al-Qaeda ever had links to Osama bin Laden. Three, rotate car antenna, rainbow flag out, Palestinian flag in. Four, watch O'Reilly Factor to perfect eye-rolling technique and huff of pained superiority. Yes. Five, today's phrase, just drop into conversation, quote, the 9/11 Commission has an agenda. It's like they're trying to smear the terrorists. End quote. There you go.
Donald Rumsfeld ought to resign.
All right, Greg, I didn't cackle through that whole thing.
I didn't chirp either.
Coming up on tomorrow's morning's edition, Stephen Push lost his wife on September 11th, and he's been leading a crusade for the truth ever since. We'll talk to him about the final days of the September 11th commission hearing. Plus, longtime Clinton buddy Harry Thomason joins us to talk about his new movie about the man from Hope. That's tomorrow's morning's edition. Stick around for Unfiltered, the Frankenfactor, Randy, and other yummies from Air America.